Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
Okay, so we went through that fourth column last night. Is that pretty clear? We'll give some examples. I'll give you some examples from my own life of what this looks like, which might help to clear this up. And so we'll kind of go over this again. Basically, the first three columns on page 65. Okay, just to kind of bring this up to speed. The first three columns are simply why I'm angry. That's the story of why my anger is justified. That's all it is. You need to have a story or you couldn't be angry. There's a reason why I'm angry. It's in your mind anyway. You might as well put it on a piece of paper. When you start to write it out, it may start to look a little different. Once you put it down, you might think, well, that looks pretty silly. That happens. We understand that. It's just what you think is true at this point, okay? You don't have to try and modify it or figure it out. Just put it down. We're just trying to get it down on a piece of paper so we know what we believe. That's all it is. It's a way of inventory, of finding out what's there. You don't have to make a big deal out of it. Like Bob said, at the top of the three columns, it says we were usually as definite as this example. So that's what we're going to do. And just get a basic outline of why you're angry. Okay? Then on the bottom of page 66, and I'm just jumping over a lot of reading here, it says, this was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Okay? That's the way we're going to start to look at these people who did whatever they did to us. We're going to look at them as perhaps spiritually sick. It says, though we did not like their symptoms and the way these disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. Again, if I want compassion and understanding for my mistakes, I've got to be willing to give other people understanding and compassion for their mistakes. I will judge myself as harshly as I judge others. That's just the way it is. And you're not going to be able to control that judgment and keep it off of yourself. It's just the way it is. So the way you get out of this is it says we ask God to help us. Show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, this is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? And now, these are prayers. God, save me from being angry. Your will be done. My will is generally to punish and get even. Maybe a little more than even. I never like to just get even. I like a little interest on my anger or with it. But it says, God, save me from being angry. Your will be done. God's will is to love and help. My will is to punish and get even. So I'm out of harmony with God when I'm angry. Then I'm just skipping over a paragraph here. Down at the middle of 67, it says, referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done. That's extremely important. They say it twice in this paragraph. We resolutely looked for our own mistakes. And then the questions that they've listed are where the mistakes are. They're giving us the answers. Where had we been selfish? So that's a given. That's always the first idea in inventory is where was I selfish? Then where was I dishonest? Then the next question is self-seeking and frightened. And we talked a little bit about that yesterday. Self-seeking, when I'm seeking for myself, I'll be afraid of not getting what I want. I'll be afraid of losing what I got. Bring the fear back home. Self-seeking and pride. Where am I seeking for myself and afraid I won't get what I want? Otherwise, there's this tendency to project the fear onto the world or on the people in it and then say, well, my fear is out here and I can't do anything about that. But if I can start to bring the fear back inside of myself and recognize that it's in me, then I can do something about it. See? And that's the idea. Take my own inventory. It says, though a situation had not been entirely our fault, they understand this. They have tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. So there he says it twice in the paragraph. Put out of your mind the wrongs others had done, and even though a situation's not entirely your fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. So that's a very important idea. And the reason that I saw this in my own life experiences is that if, when I was doing inventory, I saw very clearly that if I can't put out of my mind the wrongs others had done, I keep justifying why I did what I did because of what they did. And that'll keep you bound to it. That was my experience with this. Okay. So this is a very important idea. And again, like we said yesterday, we're not talking about, where our part. We're not looking for our part. It is constantly talked about in Alcoholics Anonymous meetings as our part. It does not say our part in here.
Any of you guys who are old enough to remember, this was written in the 30s, the late 30s. And the language then was used much differently than it is now. Do your part was a big deal. The pre-war and World War II, we all had to pitch in and do our part. What that meant was we all have to take responsibility and we all have to do what we can do. That's what do your part meant. When we use that to mean that somehow you have some culpability in my anger, that's just completely the wrong meaning. That's why they're very clear about putting out of our minds the wrongs others have done.
And this is exactly why we put the fourth column on the back of the sheet, because you don't want it staring you in the face when you're going into this. So here, I can give you an example from my own life that will maybe help to clarify what we're talking about here. Probably 5 years before I got sober, I had this antique plumbing fixture store. And what happened was I had traded a piece of property for this business, for an inventory and for the business. A man had purchased it after a fire, and he was a plumbing contractor, and it was antique fixtures, and it was a huge, inventory, over 10,000 square feet of stuff. And it was heavy, and he had just moved it in, and he was trying to operate it, and he couldn't. And I always liked the salvage business. I liked to buy and sell things. I was doing that on my own anyway. I had garages full of stuff, and I wanted in, and he wanted out. And I had a piece of property that a building that I had a purchase agreement on, okay, and I had $1,500 down on it, and I started talking to this guy about this business that, or this house that I had, and he says, well, maybe we can work a deal, and you can have the business that I got, and we'll trade for the house, and we'll work a deal. So we went into it with that idea, and one of the things about this house that I had purchased was it was going to bail out the house I was losing. The house I was living in was a triplex, and it was in foreclosure because of lost rents, okay, that I started losing rents from some people. This is back in the early 80s, so there was the economy had fallen. So I was in trouble, and I was trying to keep this thing out of foreclosure, and I was able to do that for about 2-3 years using something called a moratorium act, and there were some ways of doing that back then. So I was collecting rent off the property, and I was trying to find a big business deal that would bail me out. See, I was always looking for big deals to bail me out. I'd get in trouble. You know how that is, don't you? So this house was going to bail me out, and now, hey, I can trade it for this store. Now that'll bail me out, certainly. I'll have this business. I'll start running it. I knew it's a lucrative business. I mean, you buy a radiator for a house, for example, for $1 or $2 each fin, and you'd sell it for $10, $15 a fin. See, so the major markup on this stuff, see. So I wanted in, he wanted out, he couldn't handle both his business, his plumbing business, and the store. So I went into that with that attitude that it's going to save everything. Well, I had a bunch of drug addicts hanging around me back then, okay? They were trafficking heroin from Mexico and speed and cocaine from the West Coast. They were selling it through this store that I had, see? So I'm making some money on this kind of thing. And I'm in trouble. This is near the end for me. And I get in trouble with the landlord where I signed the lease with. They were putting a restaurant above my head, and the owner was letting people into the store when I wasn't there, and they were stealing my stuff, the workmen, and stuff was disappearing, and I had some grievances against this guy, and then there was some other things that happened with some radiators he had in the building that were leaking, and it was damaging my inventory, and I wanted to get out of there. I just wanted to get away from him because he wouldn't deal with me on getting the insurance to cover this, and I was angry. So I did something particularly stupid. I told him, look, I'm just going to move this stuff. Now, to move this stuff is a major proposition. You back in semi-trailers, you have them drop a trailer, and you give guys crystal methamphetamines, and they carry toilets and pipe fittings and radiators and clawfoot bathtubs, and I got hundreds of toilets. I mean, you got to box all this stuff. This stuff is fragile. And we carry it up. And so I pay the first month's rent on the next place, $1,500. That's a lot of money back in the mid-80s, to me, anyway. $1,500 rent. Pay the first month's rent, you sign a lease. Pay half of the second month's rent, keep moving in. Don't have the other half because I'm spending it on trucks and on help. Third month comes around, I don't have the last half of the second nor the third month's rent. Now, Harold, the guy who owned the building, he looks at me. Now, you got to understand, he knows he's in trouble and he's got a problem on his hands here. You know, he can see that in me. He looks at me halfway through the third month. I don't have his money. I said, I'll get it for you, Harold. Don't worry. Oh, nope. I'm done with you. Get your crap out of here. Now, you got to understand, I just spent 3.5 months getting my crap in there. I got Pam is at home. We got 2 kids. My kids were probably 2 and 4 years old at the time. This is unbelievable. I've just spent 3.5 months of my life working day and night trying to get my crap in there. I just got it on shelves. I got everything unpacked. And now display cases are set up. I got to move it again. This is such an unbelievable proposition that I can't even tell you. Wow, the resentment is tremendous on this one. Now, I don't have the $2,000 it cost me to get the next place. So I'll tell you what you do when you're like me. Okay, I'm a thief. You go out and you do things. You steal things. You cheat people. You do what you got to do because this is going to bail out the house I'm losing, and this is going to save my life in a sense. So I spent another 4 months moving this stuff. At the end of that 4 months, Harold was hiring his own men, paying them to load my stuff and get it out of his place. He wanted me out of there so bad. It was a huge proposition to do, see. Well, 8.5 months I'm moving. You're not open. You're not making any money. It's costing you money. And I'm doing things I said I would never do with people I said I'd never be with. And I couldn't not do it. I felt caught. I couldn't just leave the inventory and walk away from it. It was going to bail out the house. And my whole life was dependent on this whole thing. What a nightmare. My life fell apart during that 8.5 months in a major way. During that time, I lost my family. Pam took the kids and left. Eventually, now they're gone. I lost the house we were living in shortly after. That was gone. Everything that I valued started to disappear from my world. Well, I come into AA with this resentment toward Harold because of this situation, see. And all of my life seemed to fall apart during that time, and it seemed to me that it was Harold's fault. You understand? That's the way it seemed to me. I'm just telling you how it looked to me. It may sound ridiculous, but that's the way it looked. So I got the first 3 columns. I'm resentful at Harold. What's the cause? Well, I just told you the cause. It's a little more definite than this example, but that's what it was. Okay. How did it affect me? And the questions on page 65, it says, on our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. So how was I injured? Was it my self-esteem that was injured? Sure. I looked foolish. I looked like a failure. I lost my family. I lost my house. I lost my business. Everything was going. Yeah. Self-esteem was affected. Did it affect my security, meaning financial? It devastated me financially. It cost thousands of dollars to move it the first time. To move it the second time was just overwhelming. Did it affect my ambitions for life? Yeah, my goals, to have a family, to have a business, to have the American dream. squashed, gone because of this circumstance in my mind. Did it affect my personal or sex relations? It ended my sex relations. She took the kids and left. All of these things were affected. That's how I was injured. Okay, that's the story. Now, I come to the fourth column, and I'm just going to read in the middle of 67. I couldn't pray and ask God to help me see it differently because I didn't believe in God. So I said to myself, I hate how I feel. I just can't stand how I feel. I got all this conflict. I'll do anything to get out of it. So I go into the fourth column with that sort of an attitude. And in the middle of page 67, it says, referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely look for our own mistakes. So I'm going to put out of my mind what I think Harold did to me, and I'm going to look for where I made mistakes in my relationship with Harold. First question is, where had I been selfish? Where was I selfish in that situation? Where was I doing for myself without concern for Harold? You know, I started to get thoughts that were not of my mind. Now, you understand, I'm an atheist. I do not believe in God. But I get this in my head. Rick, the voice sounds like my voice, but it uses my name, which I thought was very strange at the time. And it said, Rick, Harold was reacting to you. I said, what? Yep. Harold was, yeah. You tied his building up for 8.5 months. You paid him 1.5 months rent, and you're mad at him? I thought, yeah, I guess that's true, isn't it? You see how the story starts to change when you ask the right question? Now you might say, well, anybody could see that. That's easy. Any darn fool could see that. I'll tell you why I couldn't see it, I think. Because I was emotional about what was happening to me. Do you think I wanted to be responsible for the failure of my business? Do you think I wanted to be responsible for the failure with my family? With my relationship with Pam? Do you think I wanted to be a failure in my ability to deal with life? With the business, with the house, my house, everything? No, of course not. When I saw somebody that I could heap all that stuff on, I projected all the rap onto him like I had no problems till I met Harold. Isn't that something? What a lie. What an absolute lie. It was just a lie. You know, when I would tell that story to people when I was still in it, I would always tell them what Harold was doing to me, but I would never tell them that I didn't pay him the rent. Do you understand? I'd always leave that information out of the story. You understand? See? Because if I told that, I couldn't stay angry. And I would have to take responsibility for my own failures. I did tell it the other way. You know what I mean? I did say it that I didn't tell anybody that I didn't pay him the rent. It justified my anger, and I told that story over and over, how I was wronged by these circumstances and these situations, and my life fell apart, and I lost my family, and I lost my house, and I lost my business, and it was Harold, and none of this would have happened had it not been for him. You know, I wasn't reading my kids' stories that night. I wasn't at home with the kids. I was busy. So what was I doing? I was projecting my anger onto Harold, and I was hating Harold for ruining my life. Now, who ruined my life? I did. I made stupid choices and decisions, and my life fell apart. I didn't want to take responsibility for it, so I projected the blame onto Harold. Then I hated him for my mistakes. Who are you hating? Yourself. Who are you going to forgive then? When you see Harold differently, you lift it off of yourself. And that's exactly what happened. Once I saw what happened, you'd think it'd make you guilty. That is not what happened to me. I'm just telling you, the experience was not that. You can intellectually say, well, it'll make you feel guilty. It did not. It took away my guilt because I wasn't pouring anger and hatred into blaming somebody for ruining my life, which was me. I immediately felt better. Then I realized, my God, I owe Harold an amend for what I did to him. How do you go from hating a guy 1 minute to owing him an amend in about 5 minutes of inventory? If you don't have a transformative experience. You understand? That's the way this thing. I didn't get past the word selfish, and I saw it. And I had to go back and clean up my mess with Harold, which I did later on. So what happened is I saw that I was distorting the facts, the so-called story. They weren't facts, they were fantasy. I was living in a fantasy world. But I couldn't see it because I was emotional about losing my children, losing my house, losing my business, couldn't see it. Blocked myself for the obvious. And that's the purpose of this inventory, is to get honest. And the truth will set you free. Isn't that the way it's said? And that's exactly what happened with that. So that's an experience, an early experience that I had. When I did this inventory, I was about 3 months sober. I was in a lot of conflict and I couldn't stand it. I didn't do inventory because I wanted to or be a good, I wasn't trying to work a program. I was full of rage and I couldn't stand how I felt. That's why I did it.
You know, Rick talks about being honest. I once got a traffic ticket for being honest.
You tell this in the workshops.
3:00 in the morning, no cars, one-way street. If I go that way, I got to go about 5 or 6 blocks. If I go the wrong way, I'm coming out of an alley. And if I go the wrong way, half a block on a one-way street, I'm right where I need to be. Not a car in sight. Turn the wrong way on a one-way street, I go a half a block, I turn onto the street that I want to be on, there's a squad car. Bam. And he pulls me over. Sir, did you know you were going the wrong way on a one-way street? Now, I'm an Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm supposed to be honest. I could have said, oh, gosh, officer, I didn't know where I was going, but I didn't. No, I got to be honest. I said, yes, I admit I did purposely turn the wrong way on the one-way street. Well, since you admitted you did it on purpose, I have no choice but to give you a ticket. So I got a ticket for going the wrong way on a one-way street. And I would tell a story. I used to tell a story during workshops. And the punchline was, so I got a traffic ticket for being honest. And I'd say that, and Rick would look at me kind of like, yeah, right, you know. And but he didn't fuss me about it. Well, we're in the middle of a workshop, and I'm telling the story. And I'm just about to do the punchline, and all of a sudden the realization comes, I did not get a traffic ticket for being honest. I got a traffic ticket for breaking the law. And it was like, bam, you know, it just hit me like that. I got a ticket because I broke the law.
And all of a sudden, tell the story a different way.
The story looks like, you know, as long as I'm justifying it, it looks like once. That's a silly little example, but it was transformative for me to realize I did not get a traffic ticket for being honest. A traffic ticket for breaking a traffic law. And so I don't have to carry that around anymore. I don't have to worry about that anymore. I don't have to be angry at the cops anymore.
I got a drunk driving ticket one time. And I told myself a story. The police didn't have probable cause to stop me.
Well, this is great.
This is how absurd it gets, okay? The police don't have probable cause to stop me, so I shouldn't have got the ticket, right? I shouldn't have got the drunk driving ticket, okay? So now I'm angry at the police because if they gave me a ticket for a DWI and I shouldn't have been stopped in the first place, it's their fault, not mine. You see how you use logic to hurt yourself? You literally use logic to kill yourself, see? So now I'm angry at the cops. I get out of jail, I'm drinking with my buddy, and we're down at the bars, and we got these big fireworks, you know, the M-80s and silver salutes, you know, the big stuff. And we're fooling around in the bars. I'm throwing them under tables and blowing them up, and the bouncers are going crazy. It's in an area where there aren't any people. I'm not doing it where there are people. And I'm just watching the bouncers fly around because the bouncers were really mean-spirited in this particular bar. So I'm fooling with them, see? Well, I'm talking, my buddy comes in the bar and he hates the cops. So I tell him the story of what happened to me. He's an easy mark because he already hates them. So I tell him the story. Yeah, we got to get even. So we go down to the courthouse in Minneapolis. This is before they built the government center. We're going to take these big fireworks and put them on the windshield, underneath the windshield wipers of the squad cars and blow the windows out of the squad cars. Bad idea. Bad, bad idea. They got them all under surveillance. They have cameras on the squad cars. They grab us. They dismantle our bombs. We go to court the next day. I watch a kind, nice judge through the whole morning turn into a monster reading a police report. He thought we were in there for fireworks, and then he finds out, my God, what we're doing with them, you know, attempting to destroy government property. He says, 5 days in the workhouse, slams the gavel down, don't say a word. Now we go off to the workhouse for 5 days, me and my friend. How did it all start? I told myself a story. The police didn't have probable cause to stop me, which was a lie, by the way. I rolled through a stop sign. They did have probable cause. It justified my anger the way I told the story. My anger justifies my retaliation. And now I'm having this new experience. I'm in jail again. Isn't that something? Talk about shoot yourself in the foot over and over and over because of my unwillingness to be honest with what? Myself. You can be rigorously honest with others and very dishonest with yourself. Yeah.
Okay, so then when you let's go back to Harold.
Yeah.
You were raised at Harold. Angry at Harold.
Right, I was angry at Harold.
You did this work that inventory and wrote down the state of column two. So Harold and column one, what you did was column two. Were you able to release the anger?
No, I simply, it just told me what my story was. Then I wrote the third column. That's why I'm angry. Then I took a piece of paper and I wrote down, where had I been selfish? And as soon as I wrote the word selfish and started to ask the honest questions, I started to get thoughts in my mind that changed how I viewed the situation. Now, I was an atheist, so I didn't think God was helping me, but that's what was happening. I was getting help. They weren't thoughts that were normal to my mind. This process opens your mind and brings about an experience. The mechanics, just doing the mechanics, if you'll do it.
It's an awareness. I don't think that you release the anger. I think what you see is you have an awareness that angry because the story isn't what you thought it was.
Well, there's a grain of truth in every story, but there's this tendency to minimize and exaggerate points and leave information out. And the more honest you get about it, the more you start to see it differently. So you don't see you're bad. You just see that you're wrong. Now, what's the matter with being wrong?
Let me give you an example. This is a powerful story, and it had a powerful effect on me. This happened probably 4 or 5 years ago. We were doing a workshop like this at a club in St. Paul. And we took a break, and a woman came to me, and she said, I was sexually abused and molested as a little girl. What could possibly be my mistake? Wow. None. There isn't any. You didn't make any mistake. Whoever did that was a criminal, and, it's not your mistake. So where's my mistake? So I said, let's sit down and look at it. Let's look through this inventory. Well, it turns out her mistake is this event happened 20-some years ago, okay? Now she's got the tape of this event. And every day she takes that tape down, and she plays it over and over and over, and she hurts herself with this tape of this event, replaying this event in her mind. She's justifying her terrible life by this event and every day. And when she looked at it, we said, well, who's really doing that? Who's doing, the guy, the monster did it 20 years ago. That's true. But who's doing it now? Who did it today? And she realized that she was doing it to herself. And it was a miracle. I saw this woman just transform before my eyes. It was just amazing.
A little awareness will do that.
She realized that she was doing that to herself. Now, this is about 2 months ago. We're doing a workshop, and I told this story, and another woman came up to me after that workshop and said, well, I had that same experience as a little girl, and I think I can see some awareness in what you're talking about. But, you talked to me a little while, so we chatted a little while about it, and she had the same experience. She came to the same conclusion. Just by looking at the facts of what happened, she realized that she was replaying that incident and beating herself up with it. It wasn't the guy. The guy did it. That's terrible. There's no excuse for that. She didn't make any mistake in that relationship as a little girl, and there's no excuse for that. But she's beating herself up every day. And she realized that she didn't have to keep doing that. She could stop doing that.
See, that's the problem with this, is that you'll take an event from a long time ago, from your childhood, whatever the event is, And then you'll justify other behaviors as you go along in your own life. This is what I did with Harold. See, I took an event and hung everything that was a failure in my life on that one incident and blamed it all on Harold, like my life was pristine before he came along. See, because I didn't want to take responsibility. I wanted to put it on somebody else. Now, so there's a tendency with this to think you're going to figure something out, right? I'll figure out what happened. Like with Harold, I distorted things. I didn't pay him the rent. But I tell you, I had one with my dad. I'll give you an example of something justified in my mind. Okay? I grew up in an alcoholic family. Both my parents were drunks. My dad was drunk all the time when I was a kid. I'm the youngest of five kids. Okay? I got a brother 3 years older, a sister 6 years older, another brother 9 years older, and one 10 years older. So I was not close to my older siblings. But I was close to my sister because she was primarily raising me. Okay? As a child, as a kid, I was in trouble a lot. I was stealing, I was lying, I was doing all kinds of stuff as a kid. And of course, they'd have family meetings. And when you go to court, when, you know, you're a juvenile, they do something called a pre-sentence investigation. See, and they investigate your family and your circumstances. Well, you know, I heard it loud and clear. I'm a product of my environment, of my circumstances. Okay? Comes from an alcoholic family. Then my dad sobers up when I'm 11. He sobers up, I start sniffing glue. Okay? He sobers up, I start. He moves out. Within a year, they were divorced, my parents. I was living with my sister and my mother. My mother was working nights, my sister was raising me. I had a lot of fun as a kid because I'm hanging around with people 6 years older. I was a ball. They were drinking and partying. It was an exciting time. It was a lot of fun for me. After the divorce, my mother, within a few months, I guess, she sold the house to my dad. She met some guy in the bar. She sold the house to my dad. He moved in. She moved out. They literally switched places. She moved into his apartment. She gets hooked up with this guy. She gets married. And now she's in another alcoholic relationship. And my dad stayed sober. So I lived with my dad and my sister. Now, my dad used to work for the post office, sorting mail between Minneapolis and Chicago. He used to run it on the trains. So he'd be gone for a week, and then he'd be home for a week. So I wasn't close to him as a kid, and I wasn't close to him after he sobered up through my teenage years. So I'm raised by my sister. We're just doing that. We'll go over to my mother's once in a while on the weekends, that sort of thing. My mother was drinking real heavy. She was in trouble with the booze. My brother Bill, second oldest brother, asked my dad to get somebody to help my mother because everybody knew she was depressed and she was in trouble with the booze. My dad didn't do it. He didn't follow through with it. He promised Bill he would do that. I found this out later in a letter from my dad. I was over there for my 15th birthday. My brother Dan and I, who's 3 years older, went over. She used to make me dinners on my birthdays once in a while. I hadn't lived with her for about 4 years, 3 years now. We get over there at noon, and she's drinking. Her new husband never does surface during the course of the day. He's in the bedroom, passed out. He never did come to. I never saw him. By the time we ate at 3 p.m, she was hammered. And I didn't like this. I'd been around her drinking a lot, and I was angry about it. I didn't like this whole scene. It was just a negative afternoon. I wanted to leave. I didn't even want to stay for the dinner. It had snowed real heavy that day, and I really wanted to get out there and make some money shoveling walks and that sort of thing. But we couldn't get a taxi cab. Nobody would show up, see? So we sat through that dinner, and I got in her face about her drinking. I called her a drunk to her face, something I'd never done before. Negative, sullen afternoon. We got out of there about 5:30 after eating. It was just a bad scene. Cab finally came. I was so relieved when I drove away from there, I can't even begin to tell you. That night, she killed herself. She committed suicide. She shot herself with her husband's handgun. Now, I got a conflict with her. Now, here's another thing. I'm in my teenage years. I'm in trouble a lot. Probation officers, school officials. He's a product of his circumstances. Look at the terrible childhood he had. You know, I didn't experience my childhood bad until I started listening to people tell me how bad it was. I was happy as a kid. I really was. In fact, my brother Dan, 3 years older, when I was 10, 11, 12 years old, he used to make fun of me. And here's the term he used. He said I was overjoyed. Isn't that something? I was too happy. Then I started feeling bad because I shouldn't be so happy. Don't listen to society. They will give you a problem, okay? Well-meaning AA people will do this to you. You'll get sober, you'll get excited about the program, they'll say, oh, he's on that treatment center high. You can't be happy. You gotta have to come down. Don't listen to him. You don't have to come down. I'm serious about that. They've been telling me this for 20 years. You gotta come off that treatment center high. I'm not coming off. I don't care what they say. Don't listen to them. They'll sabotage you. You can be happy in your neurosis. You don't have to have everything fixed. You can be happy without being perfect. Don't worry about it. I'm telling you, all you got to do is get in the river and get in the flow. So now I got this major problem. I'm blaming my circumstances. I'm blaming my dad. I got all these events that have happened. I'm hanging my hat on them. Yep, it's because of my childhood. And it gets me out of going to jail on occasion. See, this is a real problem. As I grow older, I'm building the case. And it's more airtight with every story I tell. And I'm telling the story, I could get a tear in your eye in the bar telling you how terrible my life was. And how it's all their fault and it's not my fault. And I'm hanging my hat on this crap. And And justifying really poor behavior later on in my life. Well, it's because of my childhood, you know. It's absurd. It's just absurd. Now, you could make a case for this, couldn't you? Psychologically. I'll give you one example why I don't believe it anymore. I was 5 years old. This is one story. I was 5 years old. They gave me a cap gun when I was a kid. Little rolls of caps in the gun. Little pop when you pull the trigger. I thought it was boring. I'm 5 years old. I didn't like the little pop. I wanted the big explosion. Well, I found out that if you leave the roll rolled up, pull it out of the gun and hit it with a hammer, the whole roll goes off at once. Now, this is impressive if you haven't tried it. Somebody handed me a roll of caps a few years ago and I whacked it. And I'm telling you, I was shocked at the amount of explosion on that thing, man. So I like this. See, I'm a little kid, I'm like this. I'm going through a lot of caps. My mother won't buy me anymore. See? I mean, I'm a one roll every whack, you know. So I'm at High Lake Shopping Center. I'm 5 years old in Minneapolis. We're at the hardware store. My mother's off shopping. Dan, my brother Dan, is right next to me like Bob is here. And we're standing there, and there's the caps. And I see them, and I want some more caps. She won't get me anymore. No, I'll get them. I made a conscious decision at 5 years old to steal them. So I took a handful, and I stuck them in my pocket. Grabbed another handful. I was just going to put them in my pocket, and my brother's standing there. He goes, Rick. That guy over there saw you. So I pushed him in his pocket and he got caught. Isn't that something? I'm 5 years old. I'm stealing and trying to give the problem to my brother. And I told that story. 18 points to me after the meeting. He says, you know, I had a similar experience when I was a kid. I got caught and I never stole again. He could. He never stole. Not me. I went on from that point stealing and trying to blame everybody else. Isn't that something? How come he quit and I went into it? Was it my circumstances? Or was it Rick just wanted what he wanted and was willing to go to any lengths to get it? I didn't know anything about alcoholism or anything else in my family back then. I'm just trying to have fun and I was willing. Everything is done with enthusiasm. That's a common theme in my life. And when you're doing things that are hurting you enthusiastically, you're killing yourself enthusiastically. So now I come into AA with all this conflict about my childhood and about my dad, and I got a resentment that won't quit. And I know I got to deal with this. I don't want to deal with it, but I know if I don't, I'm going to be miserable sober, and I am not going to be miserable sober. I refuse. I made this decision. So I start looking at it through the columns. I'm resentful at my dad. That's the first. That's the name. Second is the cause. I just told you the cause because of my childhood. He wasn't there when I was a kid. He was drunk. He was not. He was working. Whatever it was. See, I told myself a story that my life would have been better had he been there when I was a kid. you know, I'd have known how to have relationships with women. I'd have known how to work on cars. I'd have known a lot of things that I didn't know because he wasn't there to teach me. That was the story. Well, I got to tell you something. My brother Bill, who's 9 years older than I am, died drunk about 10, 12 years ago, angry at my dad because he was there when he was a kid. Well, which is worse? Is it worse that he was there, or is it worse that he wasn't there? Well, I got to tell you something. I think it was worse that he was there, to be honest with you, with my brother. Because I didn't see all the fighting and all the hat. I didn't see all that crap. But it didn't stop me from becoming angry. So I'm looking at this now. That's the second cause, basically. How I was affected. Did it affect my self-esteem? Sure. My child? Yeah. How I saw myself? We talk a lot about self-esteem in our culture today. You know, like people have low self-esteem. I got to tell you, drunks have total self-esteem. They're full of self. That's what the problem is. You're not going to make a better self. The idea here is not make a better self. Let it go. What'll emerge is your spiritual self. See? So, was my self-esteem affected how I saw myself? Sure. Security affected. Financial? Sure. I didn't know how to work, didn't know how to hold a job. Was my ambitions affected? Yeah, ambitions was a big one. Yeah, my goals for life? Yeah. Did it affect my personal or sex relations? Of course. It affected every area, this resentment, in my childhood. So I get to the fourth column. It says, referring to our list again. Putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely look for our own mistakes. I didn't make any mistakes. He did. Couldn't put out of my mind the wrongs others had done. This is why I saw so emphatically the importance of this idea of putting out of your mind. I couldn't do it. Couldn't do it. I kept justifying why I did what I did because of my childhood, because of my dad. Oh, it's all his fault. I wasn't selfish. He was selfish. Couldn't stop looking at him. I did one of the most important things that have ever happened to me. I took the piece of paper with my dad's name on it, and I set it aside, and I said, Dad, I'll deal with you later, and I went on to the next resentment. I knew the process worked because I had that experience with Harold. You understand? So I knew it worked, but I couldn't deal with my dad directly, so I set it aside. Well, I went to the next resentment, and it happened to be with Pam, my ex. Now, Pam and I were together for 11 years. We had two children. My kids were 4 and 6 years old when I walked into AA. When I was two months sober, we split up. She'd had as much fun as she could stand. You understand? I was with her for 11 years. If she'd have been doing to me what I was doing in that relationship, I wouldn't have stayed with her for 6 months. We dish it out real well, but boy, we don't take it very well, I'll tell you that. I got nothing but compassion for that woman today. But I had a resentment toward her for breaking off my perfect little family, my Leave It to Beaver family. You know, two kids, the White House, the picket fence, the whole American dream. She took the kids and left. I couldn't fix it. Again, I said this, I think, yesterday. I would love to tell you that I wanted her back in the worst way because I loved my children and her so much, which was true, but there was this element of I hated my dad for what he did to me as a kid growing up, our family, and I knew that judgment would come on me, so I would have done anything to keep her and the kids. There was that element to it, and I got honest, I saw it. So now I know that judgment's going to come on me and I can't get her back and I'm angry at her for breaking off my perfect little family. Well, if you'd have asked her if it was a perfect little family, she'd have probably said something like it looked like a horror movie to her. You know, Jason with a hockey mask and a chainsaw coming at her. That ain't the way I termed it. I termed it this perfect little family. Now that justifies your anger, doesn't it? If somebody destroyed your perfect little family. You see how you tell the story to justify the anger? So now I'm angry at Pam over this, see? Now I come to the fourth column. And every aspect of my life was affected by this. In the fourth column, referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely look for our own mistakes. Now where did I make mistakes in my relationship with her and the children? First thought that came to me, I said, where was I selfish? And the first thought and the voice did it again to me. It said, sounded like my voice, but it said, Rick, you did. exactly the same thing to your family your dad did to his. And I said, what? Didn't want to see that. You walked right in your dad's shoes. You weren't there when your kids were small. Because you were moving your store around town and you were trying to pay the attorney fees for the mortgage company to keep it out of foreclosure and your house and all these things. I was busy. I wasn't there when my kids were small because of that stuff. My dad wasn't there because he was drunk and he was working on the railroad. The form of us not being there was different, but the content was the same. We both weren't there. You understand? It's not form that's important, it's content. Different form, same content. We both weren't there. Now, I thought about it. The things that I did, I never did with any malice or intent to hurt anyone. You know, I felt like I was making choices, the lesser of two evils. You know, I'll make the choice that hurts the least for the most involved. I'll sacrifice my relationship with her and the kids. I'll move my antique plumbing fixture store around town. I'll feed $100 a day drug habit because if I go to sleep, I can't move this stuff and I'm going to lose everything. The house, the business, everything. So I'm caught. And I'm doing a lot of speed back then. I'm grocery shopping at 3 o'clock in the morning because she won't get a driver's license and drive a car. So somebody's got to do it sometime. Sacrifice my relationship with her and the kids all for the good of the family. See, at least my kids will have one parent there. I had nobody. That's the way I thought of it. I didn't. It's a lie. I had my sister. It wasn't true that I had nobody. That was another lie. See? But that's how I justified it. At least my kids will have one parent there, and I'll be this noble guy and sacrifice my relationship. I'll back away, do what I gotta do to keep things going, and I'll keep a roof over their head and food on the table. I thought that was a noble gesture. I thought I was being a good father. Her family, my family, didn't see it that way. Her brothers, her mother, her dad, her sister. Everybody thought I was a big jerk for what I was doing. Isn't that interesting? Completely different perceptions from the same situation. Who's right? Them or me? Then I thought, if they could see her family, my family, from their little perspective, what I can see from my larger perspective. You understand that, don't you? If they could see that I'm grocery shopping at 3 in the morning, if they could see I got to keep my house out of foreclosure, if they could see all the things that I can see that I'm doing, moving my store, that sort of thing, if they could see from their perspective what I can see, they would see that it's not happening the way they think. That did it. It's not happening the way they think. Then I get this thought, Rick, your dad's situation was no different than yours. I'm not looking at my dad. I'm looking at a resentment toward Pam. And I'm starting to heal. Your dad's situation was no different than yours. Could it be he was caught in addiction just like you were? Sure. Could it be he was making choices the same way you were? Sure. Would I accuse myself of all the horrible things I've been accusing him of? How could I? I've just been rationalizing why I did what I did. It made perfect sense to me why I did what I did. It looked crazy to everybody else, but from my perspective, it made perfect sense. Could my situation toward my dad be the same? Yes, absolutely. I went from hating this man to realizing, my God, I owe him an amends. Well, didn't he drink through my childhood? Yeah. Didn't he, weren't they divorced? Sure. There were events that happened. Did it change any of those events? Nope, they still happen. But it changed how I viewed those events. I went from hate to writing him a letter, thanking him for staying sober from the time I was 11, hoping I could walk in his shoes in recovery rather than insanity like I had. And I let somebody read that letter before I mailed it because I didn't trust myself. I didn't want any anger. I wrote that letter because I'd been treating this man for 25 years as if he ruined my life. And I'd been gossiping to other siblings and hassling this guy. And whenever I hadn't seen him in 20-some years. And I'd gossip and tell stories about him.
And I felt very bad about that when I saw that the story wasn't true. He didn't ruin my life. I made stupid choices and decisions that last 5 years. Never asked his opinion or permission. I just did dumb things. My life fell apart, and then I gave him all the credit. Then I poured energy into hating him for what I did to myself. Who you hating? Yourself. The energy that you're pouring in, the angry energy toward others, is the angry energy toward myself. I knew somewhere in my mind I did it. And then I hated him for what my mistakes. Now, a month later, I'm at the mission with my sponsor. He looks at the group, points to me, and says, look at that guy. He's grinning like that all the time. I didn't even know I was happy. It had changed. I was unaware that I had even changed. But I was excited, and I was happy, and I was sharing what was going on. And then I thought, where did all my guilt and my remorse go? I carried this guilt like a heavy weight around my neck. You know, I was remorseful about how I treated my family, and I hated myself. I knew how wrong I was. As soon as I got sober, I knew it. And I was depressed, and I was upset about it. It was all gone. Where'd it go? When I let my dad off the hook, I let myself off the hook. How are you going to judge others for being a crappy parent when I've done the things I've done? Any judgment toward my dad was hatred toward myself. And that's what I realized. This happened without even writing about my dad. I'd already set that sheet aside. My guilt and my remorse about what I did to my own family was tied to my judgment of my dad. Yeah. That if there's nobody else to blame and you're hating yourself, is there no one you're angry at? In any area? That's what I'd write. Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah. You can't forgive yourself for making the mistake. Right. Can you forgive others for making mistakes? Or are you hard with others? This is the thing you'll see. Because that judgment won't just come on you. You'll start to see it out there in others when they make mistakes or they do something stupid with a car or they, you know what I mean? And then you'll have this harsh judgment you'll want to mete out toward others. And I'm telling you, based in your own guilt and your own hatred toward yourself, you'll see it differently by seeing others differently. They start out by having you look at any anger you might have in any way. However insignificant it might be, take a look at it and write it through these columns. Take a couple of those sheets. This is where the healing will happen. As you start to have understanding and compassion for others, you'll start to have understanding and compassion for yourself. When you've done something like killed, taken somebody else's life through a car accident, that's why they call them accidents. They're not intentional.
Maybe this will help a little bit. We get hooked up. Forgive is an emotionally loaded word. To forgive something means that I have to lie down and be a doormat and let the world walk on me, and I have to be guilty and feel terrible. And it feels like I'm justifying some kind of terrible behavior, doesn't it? It feels like I have to justify some kind of... I'm going to pat you on the head and say that awful, terrible thing you did is, well, it's okay because I can rise above it now and pat you on the head. Forgive means let go. Forgive doesn't mean be a doormat. Forgive doesn't mean, it has virtually nothing to do with judgment at all. Forgive means let go. When the bank says to the third world country, we're going to forgive your loan, they're not saying you didn't take the money. You did take the money. They're not saying it's okay that you didn't pay it back. It's really not okay that you didn't pay it back. You're supposed to pay it back when you take it. What they're saying is, we are going to let it go. We are going to let it go. Nothing about, you know, whether it was wrong or right, whether it was justified or not, whatever it was, I'm going to let it go. Why am I going to let it go? Because I'm beating myself. It's like the woman who was molested. I'm beating myself up with it. Every day I'm beating myself up with it. You know, I know that's a tough one, but as Rick said, that's why they call it an accident. It's something that happened. You feel bad. Maybe you got in a car accident because you were drunk. I did that. I didn't kill anybody else. I almost killed myself. And you know, maybe I was behaving in a way that wasn't the best at the time. I don't know.
It's because just, of the addictions?
Yeah, it's just, you know, yeah, because, it, exactly.
Because I'm addicted to something, I'm overdoing chemicals, or whatever the circumstances are. But, sometimes it's not even that.
But really, the choice is to move on with my life, to try to be helpful to others, to try to make some kind of a life out of this, or to continue to live in that thing and continue to beat myself up with it every day. That's really the choice there. And I don't have to do that.
You know, drunks, and I think it's general people in general, but drunks do this especially well. We take responsibility for things that have nothing to do with us, and then we won't take responsibility for things that have everything to do with us. It's amazing, isn't it? And you'll use the thing that has nothing to do with you to hate yourself and to hurt yourself and do it. And you rehearse the story and literally cause pain to your own mind.
We love to do that with our kids. We love to be responsible for our kids' bad behavior. Yeah. He wouldn't have done that if I had been a better parent.
I know this from Al-Anon. I've been in Al-Anon for 20 years.
I just love that you talked about yesterday as a resentment.
Right.
And we say we're all nerding ourselves. But I think, you know, when we bring that resentment home, that's not true.
You're hurting others.
We're hurting people around us.
That's right.
So, like, there's more possibility for that.
Absolutely. He's absolutely right. You have a responsibility to be happy. For other people's sake. There's nothing worse than when you're miserable. Get well. Take inventory. Get past that so you don't have to be a pain to everybody. Right. Exactly.
You know, everybody leaves
if you want to. Boy, I don't know. I was a dry drunk for a long time, and I thought I was just treating everybody else in a wonderful way.
Is that why those women were crying in that session?
I've been a musician my whole life, and I was producing a recording session, and two girls singing out in the control room, out in the studio. And they weren't singing it the way I wanted them to, and I started yelling at them.
Pre-AA.
I'm yelling at them. And finally, I got so abusive that they started to cry. These women are out there singing. They're supposed to be singing a song on a television commercial, and they start to cry. And my client is sitting next to me. Says, is this a really good use of my money here? You know, you're yelling at these gals to the point where they're crying instead of singing.
Uh-huh. We're amazing.
Well,
yeah. Yeah. Right. Right. Use what's current in your mind. A situation that happened today, or yesterday, or last week. And what you'll find is it will be leading you back to another place. Like, for example, every time I used to hit the front door at 2218, there was a guy at the front desk. He just bugged me. There was something about him I couldn't stand. And I'd get in there and I'd feel a stab of pain in my guts and I'd go, ah, I just gotta get away from this guy. See? Didn't even know him. So, as time went on, he sees me acting a little weird and he starts to act weird. And then I look at him, I think, yep, he is a jerk. I knew he was. See, I didn't even know the guy. You know what I realized? One day it occurred to me, he reminded me of my dad. He had a nose like my dad's. And honest to God, every time I saw him, I felt the pain of that grievance toward my dad. It was before I resolved that. Wow. When I resolved that, I don't see my dad in him anymore. It's not negative, see?
I heard Rick tell that story. That's the dumbest damn thing I ever heard. You don't like some guy because his nose reminds you of somebody else? I thought, that's ridiculous. So I get in a business situation with a guy, and I don't like him. I don't like this guy, and I can't figure out why, but I just don't like him, and I'm wary of him, and the business deal isn't working very well. And I realize he reminds me of, he kind of looks like a guy that I had a lot of trouble with a few years ago. I did exactly the same thing. Thinking that it was really foolish and stupid, and nobody with a brain and a half would ever do anything like that, and I did exactly the same thing.
Oh, yeah. You'll be amazed. See, so what happens during the course of your day or your week is you're seeing your past all the time in others, and that's why people irritate you so much and you don't know them. There's an error in me that needs to be resolved. If you'll inventory it with that person, it'll lead you back to another time. That's the way this inventory works, and you'll start to get at the root of what's going on. And if you heal it in one area, it'll affect all of them.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.